Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Julietta Tilevi. And joining me to take your questions this evening are Ashraf Mohammed from Corner Peace Capital and Wayne McCurry from F&B Wealth and Investments. If you'd like to send questions to us, please SMS 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Wayne, Ashraf, good evening to you both. Wayne, if I may start with you, it was a slightly better day on the JSE today in the sense that we didn't fall in another heap. We were only down about 0.5% by the close. I mean, the Rand took most of the smack yesterday. But if I can reference David Shapiro, who's jetting off to New York this evening, one of his tweets yesterday was that if you've got markets reacting so violently, if they can swivel so violently on a decimal point miss, you just actually want to stay out of the markets. Is that how you feel at the moment?
Now, look, I think David, by and large, is right as per normal. Look, the actual problem is not the data we're getting. I mean, we know inflation's high. We know interest rates are going up. And inflation probably has peaked. But the real problem is the markets rallied sharply and strongly till the day of the Fed Reserve speak. When was that? 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? And now they're coming off. So the real problem is the market shouldn't have rallied in a bear market with rising interest rates and rising inflation. I mean, literally, it was rising in a vacuum of good news. There was no logic and reason for the markets to rally. Mm. Now it's just coming back to reality. So I actually don't think it's anything terribly unexpected about the data. So, okay, so inflation was 2.2% higher than what it was expected to be. If the market hadn't have rallied so strongly, it probably wouldn't have reacted to this inflation number, because David's quite correct. I mean, these are 0.2%. It's nothing.
Yeah.
But, you know, when the market has built up false expectations and all of a sudden even the smallest amount of negative data that goes against that expectation, markets can collapse. And that's exactly what they did last night.
Mm. Ashraf, do you sense that there's going to be the mother of all interest rate hikes at the next Fed meeting? I think it was Sean Ashton saying today that it's going to be quite tricky for the Fed to raise interest rates massively because the U.S. government has so much debt. That's going to become a bit of a problem for them.
I think there will be another 75 basis points and then a further 75 bips after that. So we'll get 150 before year end. Sure, the U.S. government debt has been the point of debate for the last 15 years. And we have that debt clock in the U.S. that perpetually ticks higher. However, the reality is that as long as people accept your paper, it doesn't really matter. As long as they accept your currency, it doesn't really matter. It's when your currency is less acceptable and people are not valuing assets in US dollars that the challenge really comes to light. Mm-hmm. So if you're looking at it, you know, on a technical basis, Sean is right, but people are still willing to accept dollars as a form of payment. It's just Russia now who are forcing Europeans to pay them in rubles, but that's just for natural gas, which they have a plan to move off in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah. And you could say that people are even more willing to accept the dollar, considering how everyone's rushed into it and is the one asset that's outperforming everything
Absolutely.
Else.
Absolutely.
To our detriment, sadly.
So the dollar's replaced gold as a safe haven. And that's why when people, you know, ask the question, why is gold not performing in this period of uncertainty? That's the short answer.
Hmm. Okay. I mean, there aren't too many questions around the crash that we witnessed really yesterday. But here's one picking up on David and Wayne's one-liners. So the viewer says, I love the one-liners like falling knives and why invest in brick and mortar, etc. But Wayne's, I haven't seen anyone jump off a building for taking some profit, is a sensitive one, this viewer says. I have sold shares at a big profit only to see them double after that. It's a sort of edge of building feeling. Wayne, I suppose.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say.
Look, as I said, you might, you, you regret selling them, but you still made a profit. You know, you still made a profit. So don't be too negative and don't be too harsh on yourself. Just to come back to the previous question that was asked about US debt, you must remember government debt is it matures over a 20-year time period, talking US in particular. So they don't pay the higher interest rates immediately at all. It's phased in as the debt matures and they've got to reissue debt. Instead of issuing at 0.6%, and now they're going to issue at 3.2%. So it is a very gradual process how their interest rate bill goes up for the government.
Okay.
But this is the next crisis, is government debt, because during the good years, with interest rates, long-term rates below one, and in some cases actually even negative, governments issued debt like there was no tomorrow because the cost thereof was effectively nil. Now, when they reprice that debt, it's going to be a serious problem, but that's in a decade's time. We don't have to worry about it today.
Yeah, let's restrict maybe what we have to worry about today.
Yes.
Just before I get to other questions, Ashraf, your feeling about the general market, is it something that you would really just kind of stay out? I mean, going back to Wayne's point, maybe the expectations were unrealistic and therefore, and the forecasts were wrong, and then everyone punishes the market because their own forecasts and their own expectations were off the charts. But is it sort of safer to just stay in cash for the time, for foreseeable future? I think maybe I've lost Ashraf there. Okay, we shall come. Wayne, I'm going to go on to questions there while Ashraf is connection reboots. Ashraf, can you hear us?
Yeah, Julieta,
Yeah.
I can hear you.
Okay.
The challenge over the next 4 weeks is a lot of companies are going to be presenting at different conferences in the US. The analysts are going to be rejigging their numbers, and it will be earnings downgrades rather than earnings upgrades. So we will see volatility in the market. And I think also Powell's FOMC speech next week will be indicative of where they see the path going into the first quarter of next year.
Okay.
And all of that's going to impact the market. So, my short answer is it pays to be out of the market for now, but really buy quality businesses at the lower levels.
Okay. All right, getting on to questions. There's one on RMB Holdings asking whether it's a good buy at these levels until it's delisting, which we discussed on Monday. We thought it was an inevitability. What other assets are left to be sold? Wayne, do you think you can make a sort of an assured buck, if not necessarily a quick one, in RMB?
Look, I'm not too sure about the delisting. I'm just not sure about that. But look, why not? I wouldn't just buy it for a delisting and some sort of premium on the takeout, to be honest.
Okay. Would you buy it? Is there any cause for you to want to buy it at this point?
Look, I think it's got to settle down a little bit first, and then we can have another look at it.
Ashraf, your thoughts on this? You know, Atterbury Europe is the asset that they've announced that they intend to sell recently. Is there much left in it that would kind of tempt you into it? Oh dear.
No, I prefer.
Ashraf?
Yeah.
Okay, slightly
Look, I mean, I must say it is more than likely it will be delisted because they're only the property assets left in there. And normally a delisting would come at some sort of premium, but to try and make a turn out of that, I'm not sure the right thing to do.
buying into operating businesses rather than just trying to buy the discount.
Okay. Yeah, sadly, Ashraf, your connection is not great. I can only assume that it's load shedding that is messing with us. You said, if I understood you there, you would rather buy into an operating company, not an investment holding company. Okay, there we've lost Ashraf. Okay, more reasons to hate Eskom. Ashraf, I don't know if I should carry on laboring this question, but you're saying you would rather not hold a company that didn't have operating assets. Is that the gist of it?
Correct. Correct.
Okay.
It's to try and take advantage of that discount. I don't think it's worth your while.
Okay. Then a question on two entirely different shares. Sanlam and Kaap Agri, would they be good buys at the current price for the long term? Sticking with you while we have you, Ashraf. Do you follow either of those?
In short, Sanlam, no. I did take a look at their results. You know, they've been the forerunners in the insurance sector in terms of the way they pivoted. But in a debate I was having with a fellow fund manager this afternoon, you know, the one thing that we were discussing is the high operating costs at another insurance company, which I won't mention now. And, you know, if they just start trimming back on those costs, you could see significant earnings growth. Unfortunately, there are regulatory costs for insurers that I think will continue to be a struggle for them going forward. So I'm not that crazy about Sanlam, even though I think it's the best of the South African insurers. Kaap Agri, I do like. I think that over a 3 to 5 year period, they will continue to generate good cash flow. I'm seeing a lot of interest in the South African farms and investment forced into South African farming assets from offshore. So I do think that Kaap Agri will do very well over the next 3 to 5 years.
Wayne, what's your view on either Kaap Agri or Sanlam?
Now, look, I do agree certainly with on the Sanlam sentiment. I mean, it's a very good company over time, but, you know, a life company is not a company you want to invest in a difficult market, in a down market, in a bear market. A lot of their earnings are geared to what the market does, and we all know at the moment it's going down, and certainly the return year to date is not great. And obviously then people come under pressure and you can't do as much selling. You know, you want these are bull market investments. So I would wait a little bit before buying on Sanlam. Kaap Agri, and you see, this isn't a comment about the company. I fundamentally don't like agriculture-related businesses. They are so cyclical, the earnings are heavily cyclical, and so much is completely out of the company's and management's control. The weather, what happens in overseas, what happens in other areas of the world that you have no control. I mean, you literally, you know, you're not the master of your own destiny. In probably the worst sector to be in respect of the influence that management can have on the ultimate outcome of profit. So I don't like any agricultural company. And certainly, when you look at Kaap Agri, I mean, the share price can go down, you know, fall massively and then double and double again and then, you know, half and half again after that. These are heavily cyclical companies.
Okay. Gaming stocks. There's a question on Sun International. I'll start with you, Ashraf. Can your panel give their thoughts on Sun International? I expect an inrush of tourists by the year end 2022. Does your panel expect a good report from our local tourism and a very good 2023 year for tourism industries? Ashraf, what do you anticipate?
So I agree with the rush of tourists coming into South Africa. I've been chatting to a few operators in Cape Town over the past 2 weeks, and they are pretty much booked up for December and the first week of Jan. People are renting out their homes again at exorbitant rand prices. So all of that is indicative of demand. And so my expectation is we'll get those numbers will be up over the summer period, and I think we'll start seeing benefits going into the new year. I know that at Sun City, they have started seeing a pickup in tourism numbers, and, you know, casinos are partly dependent on tourism. The other part is the local economy, and so I think we'll see a bit of a pickup in that activity as well, although there was a lot of local tourism going to Sun International resorts and hotels in the past year. So I don't think that's going to kick up significantly.
Yeah. Wayne, I mean, you're thinking, you know, Sun International is in clearly a much better financial position than it has been for a very long time. the pandemic notwithstanding, or possibly because of the pandemic, because it had to make such aggressive and deep cuts, had to really, you know, sort out the business. At 30 Rand, do you think it's sort of fairly priced now, though? Or is the market maybe missing what could be a bumper next 2 years?
Look, with the Rand where it is and no gas and you can't keep warm in winter in the UK and Europe, we are going to see bumper tourists coming here. I mean, and when you look at the results from all the hotel companies, they're actually well over the COVID now. And as you were saying earlier on, you know, never waste a good crisis, because when you get a crisis and you retrench and you slash costs, you know, you don't pick up those costs again immediately. You actually carry on with the reduced cost base for quite a while, because you learn to do, you know, more with less, essentially, during any crisis. Mm. So these companies are going to generate enormous profits, I would think, going over the next few years. But it's a cyclical thing again. But certainly right now, it's probably up. I think there's still more upside.
Mm. Okay. Then what about Conduit Capital? This viewer is quite a persistent question, and he says, what do you think about this company? Its main asset is about to be liquidated. At 4 cents a share, is this worth a punt, considering it still has private investments that are worth more than its current market cap? Ashraf, would you take a chance on this?
No, I wouldn't take a punt on Conduit Capital. I would rather I'd rather go and mine diamonds in the Orange River.
Okay. Yeah, all right. Let's go way up risky investments. Okay. Ashraf's going to pan for diamonds. Wayne, I mean, to side with this, the viewer, if there are private investments that are worth more than the present market cap, is it an inevitability that somehow someone else is going to recognize that and you could say double your money? Or, you know, if it goes up from 4 cents to 6 cents a share and you've bought a whack load of them, you could do quite well.
Look, two things. Number one, you must treat this as option money, because it's either going to double or triple or go to zero, because that's the nature of this. The second point is, there's a key word there in private investments. You never know the value of anything until someone buys it from you and pays a price. You don't know what, I mean, any private investment, any director's valuation is an estimate. It's a guess of what they think the business is worth. Mm-hmm. You know, stock market, you might not like the price, but there is a definitive price that you know assets are worth on the stock market. Private investments, off market, unlisted, you truly don't really know what that value is until you sell it or list it.
And I suppose the other question is, can you believe what management's valuations, if this is the management that has essentially run a company into the hands of curators and liquidators?
Well, look, that's the point, is you don't know what that value is until someone's prepared to pay you money for it.
Mm. Okay. There's a question, I don't know if it's an answerable question by either of you, but it's, please ask the panel, what's the difference between the active ETFs on the JSE to be launched in October and the ones that we buy through brokers like Easy Equities? Ashraf, do you have any further insight?
So the ETFs you buy through Easy Equities are either based on a benchmark or a theme, etc., and they're not traded on a daily basis. They're traded on quarterly when the strategy is adjusted or the benchmark is changed. An active ETF, for those who know about Cathie Hood, would be the ARK Innovation Fund, where they regularly trade within the ETF. So it operates very much like a unit trust, but it's just a different form. Mm. And that's really the difference between an active ETF and a benchmark or a themed ETF.
You're thinking, if you're a buyer of ETFs, you're going to be taking what is going to be happening to the overall market now. Would you still be comfortable with that? Or is this a time where you want someone to pick stocks, or is there absolutely no guarantee that your stock pickers are going to do any better than what you're seeing on the general market performance?
Well, look, one thing, you know, half the stock pickers will do worse than the market and the other half will do better than the market, because that's how the market works. But As Ashraf was saying, it's just another legal format for a unit trust. ETFs came on the scene as index trackers or, very specific, call it index tracking, for want of a better word. You are tracking something or you're following the price of something, a commodity or whatever. So it was just a liquid way, an easy way for you to buy platinum shares or to buy underlying coal or whatever the ETF was tracking or trying to represent. An active ETF is just another legal form of a unit trust, as far as I can make out.
Yeah. Okay. Just Ashraf, on Cathie Wood's ARK Innovation Fund, hasn't had a very good year. Is that a cautionary tale? Or is it just the underlying investments were the wrong ones?
Look, she has a specific investment theme. She's looking at innovative businesses, and her view is that expect capital growth over 5 to 10 years. The theme she invested into, came front and center during the lockdown period. So you can say it was fortunate in one respect because it drew a lot of attention to the fund, but unfortunate because they got a slew of money coming through the door and they were forced to invest it into these assets. And then it became a self-fulfilling prophecy. And then, of course, as the money gets withdrawn, it works the other way. So and we are.
Yeah, so we've lost you a little bit there, but I think we have you still.
Okay. So I just think that, the markets have moved against it, but I do like a lot of the ideas within the fund, but not for right now. Maybe start looking at it in 2 to 3 years' time.
Okay. There's another question on Thungela. I'm sorry for the viewers who watched the show last night, because I think there was one on actually trading Thungela with regards to the dividend that you're about to get out of it, the 60 Rand dividend. Wayne, the question, though, was with rising interest rates, is Thungela still a buy? Or is that sort of not a factor that you need to consider with a stock like Thungela? It's purely the coal price.
Well, the coal price is dependent on economic growth. So if economic growth is going to slow down because of higher interest rates, the coal price will come down and all commodities will come down. So now's not the time to buy a commodity share. Hang on. I think you'll get these shares significantly cheaper. I know coal's a very specific case because, no one touched coal for 5 years and all of a sudden people worked out, 50% of the world's power is still generated by coal and there's no new supply. So the price went through the roof. But, there is no such, there's no better cure for high prices than high prices themselves. Because when the price is too high, you make a plan, you use something else or you use less of it. You make a plan. So I certainly wouldn't buy it. The story about dividend trading, if it pays you a 50 Rand dividend, in theory, everything else being equal, the share falls by 50 Rand.
Yeah. Ashraf, do you have a similar view? I absolutely agree with Wayne. If you're going to get economic growth gummed up, you don't want to be owning commodity shares. But coal is in a particular place because of an outlying event, which is the war in Ukraine and the standoff with Russia. Europe's dependence on Russian gas and its desire to loosen itself from that dependence.
Correct. And it speaks to my stock pick as well. So maybe I should go there given the time limits.
No, you go for it. We are onto stock pick time anyway, so you might as well launch into it.
Yeah, so my stock pick being Exxaro, it's sitting on a PE of just over 4 times. And the reason why I like coal is Wayne said that, higher prices forces people into alternatives. The higher gas price forced people to look at an alternative, as well as the Russian sanctions, and that alternative is coal. So that's the one part of my argument. The other part is the Chinese government's just announced 5 new coal-fired power stations. There's no new coal supply. India continues to use coal because their refinery in In Gujarat is under significant pressure, and therefore they can't pump out enough oil to generate electricity as well. So that's going to keep the oil, the coal price elevated for a while still. So I know we've got slightly differing views, but I think the coal price remains above the level which I've chosen of $350 a ton. For the at least the next 6 months.
Okay, and Exxaro for you maybe is a slightly less frothy option than Thungela.
Yeah. Far less, and great cash management as well as the fact that they're moving into alternative energy.
Okay, Wayne, how about you?
On my stock pick.
Yeah.
Okay, my stock pick, we really spoke about it last week, I think it was, because it was a question on it, and that's Coronation Fund Managers. I mean, this share price is back at COVID lows. I know the dividend's been cut, and it might be cut again, but you still, even if the dividend halves from the current level, you're still going to get a very good dividend yield on the share. The price-earnings ratio is single digit, and you're in a bear market. I mean, that's the exact recipe to buy asset management companies in a bear market where the price has collapsed and earnings are coming under pressure, and no one likes these companies at all. And, it's a typical, sort of value or deep value type of play. And I think that's the way to do it because, looking back in Coronation, this is essentially the cheapest in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
And this share price from this level can easily double. All you've got to do is inflation come down, the end of next year, interest rate cuts, bull market, share will fly.
Okay. Wayne, Ashraf, we have to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Ashraf is Mohammed is from Corner Peace Capital. Wayne McCurry is from F&B Wealth and Investments. We'll be back with Stockwatch tomorrow night. Same time, same place. Have a good evening.